So congratulations, you survived another election. Prime Minister Trudeau will remain leader of our nation for another term. Now, during the past 40-day electoral campaign, there's been a lot of mudslinging on all sides. It's hard to imagine many people itching to pursue public service after this election. Of course, there are some benefits to holding office in Canada. There are some benefits. I mean, just consider the perks of the Prime Minister. According to the approved budget of 2018, the total compensation for the PM is $347,000 per year. But that's not it. He or she are provided with two official residences and an office, staff to go with it. The primary residence, of course, is 24 Sussex Drive in Ottawa, while the secondary residence is a country retreat at Harrington Lake. Worried about people getting into your face? Well, don't worry. The RCMP provides security for the Prime Minister and his family. An armored car is provided for his or her transportation, as well as the shared use of two aircraft. Of course, my favorite perk, the Prime Minister has his own personal chef. Imagine being able to choose your own daily menu and not having to worry about the dishes. Hearing about these perks and privileges sometimes makes me wonder, wouldn't it be great to be Prime Minister? Wouldn't it be great to have so many people attending to my concerns? Last Sunday, we had Will Hogeveen visiting from Young Life. Will spoke about King David. Now, the Bible is clear, and I think Will highlighted this for you, that King David had many failings. But he is also remembered as a man after God's own heart and as someone who put the worship of God front and center in the United Monarchy. Well, when David died, his son Solomon succeeded him. Solomon is remembered for his extraordinary wisdom, and during Solomon's reign, there was a period of unprecedented peace, prosperity, and cultural development. Solomon built the first temple in Jerusalem. But Solomon notoriously oppressed his subjects through hard labor in order to pursue all of this ambitious building plans. He became a man of excess and enriched himself from the tribute and products of his own land. And Solomon wasn't wholeheartedly devoted like his father. He built altars to the worship of foreign gods, notably those worshipped by his foreign wives, and Solomon himself participated in their worship. When Solomon died and his son Rehoboam succeeded him, the northern tribes approached Rehoboam and asked him to lighten the load of his father. They had been carrying the huge burden of Solomon's ambitions for decades. Now that he had died, they were ready for change. As you heard this morning, Rehoboam asked for a few days to consider their request. In his deliberations, Rehoboam consulted with his father's advisors. These men had lived through King Solomon's excesses, and they encouraged Rehoboam to listen to the people. If today you will be a servant to these people and serve them, and give them a favorable response, they will always be your servants. Rehoboam wasn't so sure about this advice, about giving in to those who had come with their caps out. And so he asked for the opinions of the younger men he had grown up with. Now, these younger men encouraged a very different type of leadership. They urged him to stop this complaining, to stop it in the bud with threats and bold promises. You may have not caught the innuendo, the coarse jocularity. My little finger, he's not talking about his finger. My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. Well, Rehoboam prefers this edgy advice. He's not going to be serving anyone. They are supposed to be serving him. He's king. So this is what he tells the people. If they had thought King Solomon was harsh, boy, do they have something coming. He's going to be doubling down on all this forced labor. For their part, the northern tribes aren't willing to put up with yet another tyrant, and they walk away from the table. They decide to follow Jeroboam. For all his boasting, Rehoboam isn't able to cower them or even compel their service. His coronation marks the end of a short-lived united monarchy. Now, it's easy to look down on Rehoboam. Very few of us would be as bold as him. Most of us aren't accustomed to manipulate through bullying and intimidation. Yet when it comes to leadership, I think it's really quite easy to adopt his attitude. I'm here to be served. Whether you are the boss or the employee, whether you are the child or the parent, it's easy to adopt that attitude. I'm here to be served. As a church leader who has served a variety of communities, I know how enticing the sentiment is. I mean, in many places, pastors are shown great honor and respect for their position in the community. I've experienced this here at St. Andrews. People bringing me produce or taking me out for lunch, paying for golf or picking up tasks around the office. People are pretty kind to their ministers. And yet kindness shown can become kindness expected. What were once gifts easily become entitlements. I've observed this in myself. You know, waiting that extra second to allow the person to say, I'll pick up the bill. Just that pause. Or stewing in my office because I'm left to take care of some task that I feel, well, that's beneath my pay grade. Someone else should have done it. Sometimes I catch myself acting like Rehoboam. I start thinking, I'm here for others to serve me instead of being here to serve others. Well, do you ever catch yourself thinking or acting this way? In truth, I think Rehoboam has many followers, many practitioners. I mean, the northern tribes walked away from him. They chose Jeroboam, but Jeroboam had the same selfish inclinations as Rehoboam. He embraced the same self-interested, self-preserving leadership style. I mean, we are told later that he set up alternate worship sites in the north. The north broke away, so while the people were to come down and worship in Jerusalem, he set up alternate sites. He didn't want them traveling down south. He was worried they get, you know, too accustomed to going down south. You know, what about me and my throne? Well, despite his being promised that God would reward his fidelity, Jeroboam puts his own throne above the people's spiritual well-being. Jeroboam, not so much different from Rehoboam. Rehoboam has a surprising number of followers. I mean, it would be decades, even centuries, before the people of Israel would find someone offering a truly attractive alternative. One who told his followers, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. There are many books written on servant leadership, but Jesus Christ penned the first one. He didn't just teach it, he lived it. And as we know and proclaim, offered his life as a ransom for many. Two different leadership styles, Rehoboam and Jesus. Thankfully, there are some leaders today that emulate the latter. Most of them are intentionally trying to walk in Jesus' ways. Jimmy Carter was once the most powerful person on the planet. He entertained presidents and kings in the White House. He controlled, he had the football, right? He controlled the nuclear weapons that could have destroyed the planet. But have you ever wondered what Carter spent his time doing after his presidency? I mean, we hear about Obama or Bush, you know, traveling, making speeches, and I don't know if you ever looked in how much it cost to attend one of those gatherings. Pretty pricey. Well, since Carter's time in office, he fought childhood diseases, negotiated peace, hammered nails for Habitat for Humanity, taught Sunday school classes. Yeah, could have been standing with the teachers here, regularly taught Sunday school classes, and regularly mowed grass and scrubbed toilets. He was on the rotation at his small hometown church. Now, when he left the White House, he could have retired in leisure or demanded lots of money on the speaking circuit, like most presidents do this day. Instead, he and his wife devoted themselves to service. And just one more interesting tidbit, because I find him really interesting. He's the only president in the modern era to return full-time to the house he lived in before he entered politics. A two-bedroom rancher assessed at less than the value of those Secret Service vehicles parked outside. Right? He wasn't looking at upward mobility. Now, let's be honest. None of us will likely ever be a leader of any nation. But most of us are called to some form of leadership. We are leaders in our families, leaders at work, or leaders in our communities. So whose leadership are we going to practice? Rehoboam's? Or Christ? Will we be serving others, or will we be serving ourselves? My prayer is that we both live and lead intentionally. May our lives look like Christ. Amen.